Greetings. Welcome back to our regular mini-podcast on Parashat HaShavua. My name is Yitzchak Etshalom, and it's good to be back as we begin the Sefer Vayikra, our study of this challenging book of Chumash, which stands very much on its own as a totally legal book. There are only two short narratives in the text, both of them tragic, and of course the text ends with a bracha and klala, but nearly all of the text is of legal nature, and not only that, but it is focused around the Mishkan in the sense of the Korbanot and the Tumah v'Tahara, which affect the Mishkan as it distances people from there. It talks about the Zav and the Zava and the Nidah and the Oledet and the Mitzorah because of the distance that they experience from the Mishkan and their inability to participate in the Korbanot. And it speaks about the Kohanim and how the Kohanim have to maintain their Kedusha, what they must avoid. It speaks about the holidays in the context of the Mishkan. Again, Elam Oadei Hashem, Hakriv Isha, and all of this is taken from the Ramban's introduction as he presents the literary unit of Sefer Vayikra, at least up until Parshat Bahar through Perek Chaf Dalet. The last three chapters seem to be somewhat placed elsewhere. Look at the first Ramban in Parshat Bahar and you'll see what I mean. But I'd like to address an overall issue, and do it over the course of a couple of podcasts, that informs not only all of Parshat Vayikra, in a sense it informs nearly all of Sefer Vayikra, and really is an issue that begins in the middle of Sefer Shemot, and that is the development and the presentation of the entire notion of Korbanot. I'd like to ask four questions, very much in the spirit of the season, on the opening lines in Sefer Vayikra, and then begin to develop an approach to an answer, which hopefully we'll continue with in the next podcast. The first question is, why is an offering called a korban? This is not just a rabbinic appellation, but the Torah consistently refers im ola korbano. Not only the verb lahakriv, but also the noun as a korban. What does this word mean, and why is it the choice word that's consistently used through the Torah to denote an offering? After all, the proper word would probably be mincha, a gift, what later would be called, using the Greek, a doron. That's the rabbinic word for a gift, instead of a korban. What does this word korban mean? The second one is that if you look at the order of the korbanot, and this is something if you look at the titles in the Torah Kohanim, the opening three chapters of Vayikra are devoted to korbanot that are given voluntarily. It's referred to as Parshat HaNidava. And only in Perek Dalet do we start with Parashat HaChova, those which are obligatory. And not only that, but the sequence is odd in a different way. We begin both with the individual, with the voluntary, and later with the obligatory offerings, dealing with those that are brought by the individual and those that are brought at any time or on particular occasions, but not set established with the calendar. It is only afterwards that we are introduced, chiefly in Sefer Bamidbar, to the korbanot of set times and the korbanot of the tzibur, within the context both of the Korban Tamid, and I'll just make a comment about the appearance of the Korban Tamid in Parshat Tzaveh. But Parshat the Korban Parshat Tamid chiefly is the one that appears in Parshat Pinchas, and all of the Moadot. The appearance of the Tamid in Parshat Tzaveh seems to have a very different function than what seems to be its similar appearance in Parshat Pinchas. And that is, in Parshat Tzaveh, it seems to be part of the functioning of the dedication of the Mishkan, as opposed to a regular Avodah. So, really, we don't have any presentation until this point, and not for quite a while, of a public offering or an offering that comes at any particular date. The korbanot, as presented in the first chapter, are three parashot of korban nedava, which is an ola, which an individual brings for whatever reason. The second parak deals with korban mincha, meaning a grain offering. And the various grain offerings, there is a mention of korban reshit, which turns out to be the korban haomer, perhaps an allusion to shtei alechem, but nothing explicit. The third chapter refers to korban shlamim, and specifically to the korban todah, which of course is brought by an individual when he or she wants to give thanksgiving to God because of salvation, because of great bounty, whatever it may be. And only in Perek Dalet do we get to a new parsha, Parshat HaChovah, where if somebody has sinned, what their response has to be. But again, it is chiefly a focus of the individual. There is a short mention about the communal offering, the Chatat HaPnimit, which is done when the Beit Din errs and instructs people incorrectly, but nothing that's associated with a fixed time. And of course, when you begin Parashat Tzav, you see the same exact korbanot that are mentioned in Parashat Vayikra, but not as Torat HaMevi, the laws of the one who is offering it from the perspective of the Israel, but rather Torat HaMakriv, or Torat HaKohen, which is the laws that are from the offering on, what the Kohen is supposed to do with them, but it is the same offerings. So the second question is, why is the sequence such that the Parshat HaKorbanot starts out not only with the individual Korban, the one that's not set with any time, but also it begins with that which is voluntary? I would think that it would have been much more reasonable to start with, first of all, the public offerings that are to set time, then perhaps public offerings that happen on particular occasions, and then obligations of the individual, and then finally, perhaps, a nedava, when an individual chooses to bring something, and the order is pretty much reversed. So that's the second question. The third question is the opening line. Adam ki akriv mikem korban lashem. And this is a line that many, many have dealt with in all sorts of different ways, but everyone will agree that the syntax is odd. Adam ki akriv mikem korban lashem. The opening line theoretically should have read, Adam ki akriv korban, if a person wants to bring a korban. Or Adam, if we want to somehow get the word mikem in there, which I'm not sure why we'd want to. But you would say, Adam mikem ki akriv, if one of you wants to bring the offering. But Adam ki akriv mikem, it's an odd phrase. But the word truth is, the word mikem is really unnecessary there. Adam ki akriv korban. So, although, of course, every one of these words is analyzed, and in Midrash Chazal, and especially in Torat Kohanim, is dealt with, nonetheless, on a simple pshat level, the word mikem doesn't seem to fit. It seems to be extra. The question is what its significance is. And the fourth question is a very, very large question, which is, why korbanot? Why is there a need for korbanot? And to this, I want to briefly address and then leave the next development for the next podcast. The very, very famous comments of the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, in the third chelik in chapter 32, where he develops his approach to Ta'ameh HaMitzvot, and he's one of the early progenitors of such an approach, or in general, to a study of the reasons behind the mitzvot. And in it, the Rambam makes a general claim and then a specific claim. The general claim is that you really do have to understand anthropology and culture of the time in order to understand mitzvot. In other words, you have to understand in specifics, the religious orientation of the Near East in the middle of the second millennium BCE to understand why Hashem presented mitzvot the way he did and the mitzvot that he did. And this is a claim the Rambam makes which bothers many, many people. The Rambam claims, famously, specifically when it comes to korbanot, that korbanot were given to Bnei Yisrael because they were familiar with a culture that offered animal sacrifices, animal offerings. And to come to them, and this is the Rambam's words, to come to a people in an environment like that and say, we have a religion for you without korbanot, the Rambam says would be tantamount to someone coming today in the 12th century in Egypt and saying, I have religion for you that involves no prayer and no fasting, but just meditation. Now, whether that means that the Rambam saw that as really the ideal form of religion or not is subject to lots of speculation. But nonetheless, the problem of Korbanot is something that the Rambam addressed, and the Rambam leaves us hanging. Because from the Rambam's presentation, it would seem to follow that Korbanot are not only far from ideal, but once we have accustomed ourselves to a religious life without Korbanot, there would be no reason to return for it, in spite of the fact that the Rambam himself, at the very end of Hilchot Malachim, presents the rebuilding of the Mikdash and a restoration of the Avodah as being part of the long-anticipated and awaited messianic promise. So that is a difficulty. And the first one, although many, but the first famous person to really attack the Rambam head-on is the Ramban. I'm saying there were those who attacked the Rambam about this even in his lifetime. But the Ramban, 100 years later, in his Perush, which is very well known in Vayikra, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Tet, attacked the Rambam head-on, and really with very strong language, with very, very compelling proofs, beginning with the fact that the Torah calls a korban reach nichoach, indicating that it is pleasing to God, etc. But we still have to ask the question. The Ramban is very worth seeing in detail and laboring over. It's a very important Ramban. It's really it's something of a redundant statement to say an important Ramban, but that one is very central. So the question really is that I'd like to pose, is the fourth question is, but indeed why Korbanot? Indeed why do we have Korbanot? Now, is it because there's something inherent about bringing an animal that brings us closer to God? Then why is that the case? So the Ramban makes his case for what he does. But remember, the Ramban is built on two pieces. The first is to attack the Rambam and attack him on textual grounds and say, you can't tell me that when people who lived before Egypt and in other parts of the world, like Cain and like Noah, and no other culture to refer to, nonetheless brought offerings and they were considered pleasing to God, so how does that fit with your theory? But then the Ramban has to make a case for, okay, if that's not the reason, then what is the reason? Why is it a pleasing odor? And the Ramban says what he does. But the question is whether there isn't more ground to dig and more to look for in the area of a korban. So I'd like to leave us with these four questions again. And in the next podcast, which should be published tomorrow night, I'd like to take a look at the order of the korbanot, the very name korban, the wording of the first critical pasuk, pasuk bet adam ki akriv mikem korban lashem, and the whole notion of korban, and see if perhaps we can get ourselves off to a running start in understanding Sefer Vayikra, and perhaps having some new perspectives in understanding at least the first few chapters with Torat HaKorbanot. We'll pick this up in the next podcast.